So, Brian, this has been a crazy week in technology, as usual. You know, you and I sit here week after week, and Brian? No, Brian.
This is Tech Bacon, a weekly conversation about the latest in technology, new media,
and random foodstuffs. I'm Scott Gold,
and this is episode number
30.
Good morning, everybody. It is September 17th, and this is episode 30 of Tech Bacon, and just so happens to be my first solo outing. My awesome co-host, Mr. Bishop, is unavailable this morning. He's out of town, and he's actually going to be on hiatus for a few weeks. He's got some extremely exciting things coming up that I'll talk to everybody about in a little bit. Not today, but it's all good stuff, and you know, we'll see how it goes. So, for this week, we're going to do somewhat of a shortened format. It's just going to be me giving you a little rundown of the tech that's been going on through the week, and as usual, a little bit of delicious food info. So, let's dig right in. This was a huge week for Windows, for Microsoft. They had their Build conference in Anaheim, California. And at the Build conference, they released the developer preview of Windows 8. Now, Windows 8 is the code name for the next generation operating system on Microsoft's platform. Obviously, we don't know if it's going to be called Windows 8. Most likely, it's going to be called Windows 8, but nobody's fully sure about that. So they released it. They gave, I think it was like 5,000, it may have been more. They gave a huge number of tablets equipped with Windows 8 to all of the attendees at the Build conference. And right that night after they released it, to the public. Anybody could download it and check it out, install it on their system. So of course, as soon as it was available, that's the first thing that I did. So, I took Windows 8, I tried to install it on a virtual machine on my computer. It didn't work too well. I tried. It finally, eventually got it installed, but at the end of the day, I took another machine, fresh installed it, got the Windows 8 up and running. It's interesting. It's very, very different. It's hard to describe, but you know, they're kind of trying to cram everything into one. So they have this new Metro interface, which basically replaces your desktop and your start menu all at once. So when you sign in, you have to sign in with a Windows Live account, and if you don't have one, it creates one for you. You log in, and you have this Metro quote-unquote desktop that has all these live tiles, very similar to what Windows Phone 7 has. Now, the live tiles, they're basically just boxes on your desktop. It's hard to describe, but you can see pictures online and I'll post some stuff. It's, you know, these live tiles that are every application you have on your computer. And you can click on them, open them up, they quickly open up. They also show live information on the tile. So if it's a weather application, on the little tile itself, you may see the weather of the day and it may scroll through different things. For stock market quotes, it will scroll through different stock market quotes. And then you click on it and it opens the application full screen. All the applications in this Windows 8 developer preview run in full screen mode. In order to get to the next application, you hover your mouse under the left corner, and when you hover it over there, you get a little looks like a start menu icon kind of, and if you click on that, it brings you back to the Metro main screen. Now, one of the biggest features that Windows is touting is that this is the all-in-one solution. This is the solution that goes on the PC, it goes on the tablet, and maybe down the road it goes on the phone, because it's, like I said, it's very similar to Windows Phone 7. So in order to do that, they have to keep up with legacy devices. So they have basically a Windows 7 interface within the Metro interface. It's very interesting how this works because it's just an app. I mean, it's more full-featured, but to get to the Windows 7 area, you click on the Metro Live Tile desktop, and it brings you into Windows 7 familiar interface. You have a desktop, you have a taskbar, you can install and load legacy programs, and then when you want to go back out, you click the Start menu, which is not the Start menu anymore, and it brings you back to the, you know, to the Metro home screen or, you know, whatever. I don't even know what to call it, just the main window. It moves around really fast. This thing is quick. That's one of the first things I noticed. Just working in and out of it was fast. You know, being able to open up the web browser quick. And actually, speaking of the web browser, there's the build of Internet Explorer 10 in here. And let me tell you, this is the fastest incarnation of Windows Internet Explorer 10 that I have ever seen. Internet Explorer. God. I don't have Brian here. I need, like, checks and balances. So Internet Explorer 10 is quick. You open it up. I felt it moving just as fast as Google Chrome. And let me tell you, that's saying something, because Google Chrome is what I use on a daily basis. Pretty nice. You know, very... Everything in it is very minimalist, and just down to the design of the apps and to the interface and the movement and everything like that. When you want to go from app to app, you move your mouse, or if it's a touchpad, you point your finger on all the way on the left side, and then you can swipe the next app in line into place. And then you can swipe the next one and go, you know, kind of almost like in a carousel of the different apps you have running. There's really no way to quit any apps. It seems like they're just always running, and that was interesting. I mean, you can go into a task manager, and then you're able to quit them, but I guess the point is that you're not going to need to. As far as multitasking goes, and this is going to be my biggest gripe for all these new OSs, and this is new Lion stuff also, it seems like Apple and Microsoft are moving towards this mobile-centric version of their OSs, right? And they're great. They're nice. They're you know, you can move in and out fast. They're simple. They're pretty easy to use. But when it comes down to it, there's really no good way to multitask. And they haven't figured it out yet. And that is my biggest issue. I don't know what they could do in the realm that they're doing this. I mean, right now, Apple... Lion is the Lion, so you still have a dock and you can still get through stuff like this. But on Microsoft, there's no taskbar anymore. There's no start menu. You know, if I want to go from my email program and copy and paste into a Word program and it's not the next one in the list, I got to scroll through four or five apps to get to that program to copy, to go back, and then paste. You know, so how exactly does that work? How are they going to implement it? And maybe this is a very... Let me just also say this is a very, very, very early developer preview. You know, this isn't even a beta. You know, this is a developer preview. It's just to show the direction they're heading. I'm conflicted on it. You know, it's exciting. I like that it's different. I like that they started from the ground up. I like that, you know, they're trying to go in a different direction than anybody else's. And that's exciting to me. But at the end of the day, I'm just not seeing what I need to be seeing as far as multitasking goes. Time will tell. You know, the Internet Explorer 10, there's actually two versions of Internet Explorer on Windows 8. There's the main one that is part of the Metro UI, and that's the one that Microsoft has said there's going to be no plugins, none. No Silverlight, no Flash, no anything. And maybe that's why it's running so fast and fluid. And very interesting for them to be doing that. Now, on the other hand, you can go into the desktop/Windows 7 mode, and the Internet Explorer in there actually does support plugins. So it's really weird. It's a little schizophrenic. It doesn't feel that way when you're working in it. I mean, it really, I was able, which is going to be nice for people moving to this, I was able to move around this within minutes, and in a very easy, fluid manner, and it's very intuitive. They did a great job of making it usable with a mouse and keyboard, and I can see, obviously, how it's even easier on a touchscreen device. Where it's going to go, I'm not sure. It's definitely going to be interesting, and we'll see over the next few months as the betas start to come out, and actually more apps start to come out, because it's hard to tell. You really can't do much on it right now. It didn't ship with a mail app or a photo app or, you know, any of these things. It was just kind of little demo things. I could surf the web and, you know, I can sign in and see what the interface looks like. So Windows 8. Also, you know, one other big thing is that, you know, they say that it's going to work on the ARM processors. Now, up until now, anything with Windows has been on Intel processors. they work very different. So the fact that they're saying this is going to be able to run on both is intriguing, and nobody's exactly sure how that's going to happen. Like, if they are on the other processors, are they going to be able to use the desktop mode, or is it going to only be available, you know, the Windows 7 desktop mode, is that only going to be available on Intel? Nobody's really sure. Only, once again, time will tell, so we'll see what's going on with that. That's my little Windows 8 rant. The next big thing this week, and which was, it's kind of a rollover from last week. So last week, Brian and I talked about, actually the past few weeks we've been talking about Netflix, and the Netflix pricing change finally went into effect. And we talked about what that was. They split it off. There's a streaming and there's a DVD only. Nobody really knew the effect of that. And also, at the same time, the Starz deal was announced that it's going to expire, right? So the Starz deal doesn't expire until next year, but apparently they cut off negotiations and it's not going to happen. This week, Netflix stock took an 18% plunge. That's a big deal. I mean, it's not a couple percentage points to, you know, offset the change. They're losing subscribers. They're not losing subscribers. Their subscriber growth rate is less than it was. But I personally know some people that have ditched it. All in all, I think it was a combo of the timing of all of this. You know, with the price increase and then the stock plunge. I mean, the price increase and then the Starz deal made the stock tank. I mean, people are losing confidence in this company. It really goes to show, you know, possibly how people think of Netflix. It's not, you know, I feel maybe it's not so much brand loyalty as everyone thought it was, and maybe they overplayed their hand. You know, I think it's possible that the guys at Netflix thought they had a stronger brand loyalty. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure if that's the case or not. You know, we're gonna find out. The other thing about Netflix, I was watching a great interview that one of our listeners, Scott from Chicago, pointed out to me with one of the higher ups at Netflix, and they don't see themselves as a competitor to the cable companies, and they don't see themselves as a competitor to live television. They see themselves in an addition. You know, they feel that their strongest part of their catalog is the back catalog, the old movies and the older television shows. And it really feels like they're focusing on that as opposed to the newer, you know, next day TV shows or newer movies. Now, if that's the case, I can see why the Starz deal doesn't mean that much to them, because that's all new releases for the most part. Not everything, but a good chunk of new releases come from that. But for all of us out there that want to, you know, cut the cord, that's not a good sign, because that means Netflix is not going to be that option. They just are going to be, you know, this back catalog of movies. And to be perfectly honest, I feel like that might be a mistake for them, because all of a sudden, you're going to get the Comcasts of the world or the Time Warners of the world realize the value of those back catalogs, and they're going to just start implementing it into the cable plan. What do you need Netflix for at that point, you know? So that's just my thought on the whole Netflix thing. Very, very telling with the stock plunge. I don't know if people were expecting that. I guarantee Netflix was not expecting that, because this is a big deal. And we'll see if maybe they scramble. Maybe they'll end up renewing the deal with the Starz after this. Maybe not. Maybe they're about to announce some new big licensing deal that they have, which would be fascinating to hear. So that's Netflix. That's what's going on there. What else? So in the world of Facebook, always fun stuff in the world of Facebook. They introduced a couple of new features this week. They were announced a few weeks ago, but pretty much, you know, put into effect this week. One of the biggest one is the Facebook subscriptions. Basically, what that is in the past, you had a Facebook page, and anybody could like the Facebook page to receive updates from that page. You didn't have to be accepted as a friend. I mean, people could lock them out, but it wasn't your personal page. You weren't accepting them as a friend. You weren't doing any of that stuff. That would be the only way someone just randomly would find you and could like you, quote-unquote like you. Now, as an individual Facebook user, you can enable it so people can subscribe to you. Now, when someone subscribes to you, it works the same way as when they like a page. They'll see all your posts, but you're not. It's not a friend-to-friend relationship. They're just subscribing to your post. Very Twitter-like, and obviously, this was influenced by the Google Plus features. So Google Plus did something very similar when they launched with their spaces, their friends with the circles for friends, and you could put somebody in a circle and follow their feeds and see what's going on. I'm curious to see how this takes off. It seems like it's already taken off a lot with a bunch of higher profile Facebook people who have pretty big Twitter followings and stuff like that. It seems like they're getting lots of subscriptions. I've subscribed to a couple people so far. It's interesting. I think it makes sense. I think it's a great feature. You know, you have, and the other nice part about it is when you post, and this was implemented kind of last week, but now it's all making a little bit more sense. When you post on Facebook, you can choose who you're posting it to, and one of the options is public. So if you choose public, all the people that are following you will be able to see your posts. So it's a very, it's a Twitter-like, you know, experience built into Facebook. I think it only adds to what Facebook's doing. The other thing that you may have noticed on your pages, and I don't know if it's rolled out to everybody, are these lists and smart lists. So what Facebook has done is all of a sudden I logged on yesterday and I had an area on the left side of my Facebook screen that said lists, and it said friends, family, school, the school I went to, the college I went to, and it automatically placed people in those lists based on their mutual interests. And then there's also one called, it's like best friends or, you know, I can't, you know, I have to look up exactly what it is, but the one on there, close friends. And so you can add people to the close friends list. And the nice thing about it is you can just go into these lists and see the feeds from just those people. So if you have 15 people of your close friends and you just want to see what's going on with them, you put them in the close friends list and you see their stuff. If you have your family, you put your family in the family list and, you know, you see their stuff. Why not? I love that it showed up. I 100% don't know how much I'm going to use it, but I do like it. And I think, I think people are really going to get into it. And the nice part is that it starts off with these smart lists and they just show up and you can autofill them. And then you can go into more and you can, you know, you can create a new list and you can add lists. It's a feature that I think is going to get a lot of use in Facebook. And so that was, you know, that was another thing that was launched this week. On the Facebook news also, there's been all this buzz about Facebook Music launching. Now, in the past, you know, Spotify did a little bit of a partnering with Facebook, and you could post to your, you know, you could share with your Facebook friends if they were on Spotify. Well, apparently, there's a new Facebook service that's going to be launching pretty soon, and nobody knows the exact name, but I think one of the rumors was that it was going to be called Vibes. There was a TechCrunch article actually just 2 hours ago this morning. And there's this programmer called, and I'm going to butcher this name, but Yavo Shap. And he dug into the code and apparently found that aside from Spotify, RDO, that have been kind of already rumored to be part of this music service, there was also SoundCloud, Deezer, and Rhapsody shown in the metadata. So the four that were shown in this metadata were Spotify, RDO, Mog, SoundCloud, Deezer, and Rhapsody. If what they're claiming, if the rumors are right, I think this is going to be awesome. If the rumors are right, what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to post a song from any of those services to your Facebook feed. And anybody else that is a part of any of those services and that song is available on any one of those services, you'll be able to play it right in your Facebook feed. Great feature. I've been waiting for something like this. When you share songs right now on Spotify, it's a link. It brings you back into Spotify. You can play it. You know, I think it's going to work similar to how people share YouTube videos within Facebook now, but with music. And I believe it only benefits the music industry because you're going to discover new songs that you would have never known before. You're probably going to hear some really bad songs that you never wanted to hear. But the only thing it's going to do is you're going to play it, and it's going to lead you to one of these services to either subscribe or to, you know, to purchase. So Facebook Music partners, rumors are rampant. This is probably going to come fairly soon. On the quick aside on the Apple front, Apple, you know, iPhone 5 rumors have been swirling. People are saying it's coming out in October. Looks to be there's going to be some sort of iPhone launch in October. The question is now, what exactly is it going to be? There have been some rumors that the iPhone 4, quote-unquote S, maybe, nobody knows what it would be called, a very similar form factor to the iPhone 4 is already rolling off the assembly lines. But the iPhone 5, which is a redesigned form factor and new specs, is having some issues, and it's possible it's going to be delayed. Very much rumor. We have no idea. But I'm curious, you know, if that's true, is that going to really hurt Apple coming into the holiday season? If is a big enough delay that we're not going to actually see an iPhone 5 till next year? We're going to know pretty soon because the rumors are the beginning of October and we're treading into the middle of September here. So we'll see what happens on that front. What else do we got? Very interesting. Should have kind of gone into the Netflix section with this, but NBC and TNT last week, they both launched iOS apps that allow you to play all their current shows on your iPad or iPhone, and along with that, you can play them all online. Now, the one catch is this is part of that whole TV everywhere approach. You need to have a cable or satellite subscription in order to access the content. It works very similar to what we're seeing on the HBO Go app and the Showtime app that's out there. I love these features. I'm torn on the fact that you have to have a cable subscription to use them, but I do understand it. I wish that wasn't the case because what's nice is you can go on your, and just on the computer side, you can go on your computer, go to TNT TV, TNT.tv, I think, and let's say I want to watch The Closer. I click on The Closer. It shows every episode of The Closer, even the most current ones, but there's a little lock next to them. And if you want to unlock them, you click on it, and then it says sign in to your preferred cable or satellite provider, and I think they have everybody on there. The NBC one works the same way. So you can view all the content, but it does come at a cost because you have to be subscribing to a cable or satellite provider. I like the trend. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out as all these content providers come out with their own apps. Does it some then eventually do they realize they don't need the cable providers? Maybe. But you know, still, I don't want to have 50 apps to watch all the shows I want to watch, you know? I want to have a Netflix or a Hulu-type service that, you know, aggregates these apps, quote-unquote apps, or shows, you know? I'd rather have the shows on demand but available in a much easier way. I don't want to have to remember that The Office is on NBC. I just want to watch The Office, you know? I don't want to have to remember that I have to go to the Fox app to watch Fringe. So it's a double-edged sword. In this realm, I like the content providers having their own way to get the content out there, but I don't like having to go to a million places to find it. So we'll see how that's going to happen. You know, I think we're definitely going to see more of these iOS and Android apps for content providers such as NBC and TNT and HBO. But maybe it will only, you know, maybe we'll see an NBC Universal app that encompasses all of their channels. And maybe we'll see a Viacom app that encompasses all of their channels. Only time will tell with a lot of this stuff. But if you want to check it out right now, you can get the NBC and TNT iOS app in the App Store. And you can also check out their content on their websites. I think that's all I'm going to go through on the tech front this week. I'm going to move to one of my favorite things, food. Yes, we know it. We eat it. Everybody loves food. Oh, boy. In the past, in the food realm, I have spoken about this elusive dessert called the Dole Whip. And I think I've described everybody what it is, but I'm going to go a little once over again. At Disneyland and Disney World, in Disneyland in particular, over by the Enchanted Tiki Room, there is the Dole Whip stand. And the Dole Whip is a non-dairy frozen pineapple dessert. It's like a soft serve ice cream, but not dairy. Tastes like fresh pineapple. You can get it as a float with pineapple juice. apparently there's a couple other flavors in Disney World other than the pineapple itself. It's an awesome dessert. My friend Dave is addicted to this dessert. It's delicious. It's good stuff. So up until now, you had not been able to get it outside of the Disney parks. And from what I've heard, you could actually get it in, you can get it, what's it called? In Hawaii. But out here, you could only get it at Disneyland. Until now. A interesting entrepreneur, I don't know how he did it, but he got the licensing rights, and maybe nobody's ever approached them to do it before, and he opened a place called the House of Dole Whip in West Hollywood, California. And the House of Dole Whip is a former frozen yogurt, you know, one of those frozen yogurt serve-yourself frozen yogurt stations that has been converted. The guy was really smart. I mean, he just opened this thing with the name, a banner sign, hasn't remodeled, hasn't done anything, and started serving out the Dole Whip, and people have been going there like crazy. He's been sold out on several days. So I finally got a chance to go there. Dole Whip. I went. I got the Dole Whip, the classic Dole Whip, and it was just like the Dole Whip at Disney. I mean, there was something in me that didn't find it quite right, but that was probably because there's all the nostalgia surrounding going to Disneyland and only getting it when you're there and it's really hot out. But as far as flavor goes, it tastes like a refreshing pineapple-y, you know, sorbet in a soft serve form. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, it's light and fluffy and delicious, because I never use the word delicious. I only use it every week. And apparently there's some other flavors that you can get. You can get like vanilla some other fruit whip made by Dole that you can get. And this is definitely an official Dole sponsored dessert, because he's got the Dole posters up all over the place, and it is the House of Dole Whip. I'm curious if we're going to see this around the rest of the country. You know, I will go there again. I definitely will go there again. But there is still something very special about being in Disneyland, and it's a hot day, and you go to the tiki room, and you get the Dole Whip, and there's commercials of Hawaii, like old 70s, or even earlier, probably 60s commercials of Hawaii playing up around the tiki room, and you're eating your Dole Whip, or you're having your Dole Whip float with the pineapple juice in there. So that whole experience, you're not going to recreate at a place called the House of Dole Whip, but the taste experience, you're definitely going to recreate in the House of Dole Whip. So that's all I got, folks. That's me on a Saturday morning alone, minus my co-host, Mr. Brian Bishop. But like I said, he has some very, very exciting things coming, and I will let you know about them when I can, but it is all great, great things, and I'm very excited for him. But I do miss him here on our Saturday morning routine. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Drop me a line. Let me know what you thought. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe in iTunes, and please, you know, give us some ratings and write some information down in iTunes. That's the best place for people to find out about the show. We're on Stitcher. You can find me on Twitter at ScottyG7. You can still follow Brian on Twitter if you want, at BC Bishop. And that's it. Until next week, take care.